Welcome back to the Bruce Allen Show, and thank you, Mr. Clapton, for that introduction. You can email me at bruce@bruceallen.com. That's Bruce and Sallon, S-A-L-L-A-N.com, or tweet me at Bruce Allen. It's time for the Women's Room with Dr. Jennifer Weberman, who is a psychologist and parent coach with over a decade of experience helping children, teens, and parents empower themselves in positive ways. She has been affectionately referred to as the Super Nanny of Springfield, as she has helped hundreds of families restore peace to their homes. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Weberman. I missed you.
I missed you, too. You've been gone for so long.
Yeah, I was at the Dad 2.0 Summit, and then I forgot the other reason we were off the air, but it's been 3 weeks, and it's good to be back.
Good to have you back.
I am eager to know what you would like to discuss based on this week's topic and this week's column.
Well, I wanted to spend some time today talking about rape and sexual assault and a lot of the myths and misconceptions about it. Your blog this week really inspired this conversation because you were talking about political correctness.
Mm-hmm.
And you made a comment regarding rape, and you said, in many circles, it's applied when a woman regrets having sex after the fact, such mm-hmm. as in a college environment when a young woman gets drunk or high and finds herself the next morning in bed with a young man she regrets having slept with. And I thought, what a good opportunity for some education about this, because this kind of misperception happens commonly.
You mean you're disagreeing with me?
You know, I agree with you, unfortunately, that there are false accusations. As in any crime, there are false accusations. But there's a lot of gray area in this that I want to spend some time clarifying.
Okay, please.
We need to eliminate the illusion that rape is the kind of thing that takes place in dark alleys or by perpetrators who jump out behind bushes and hold a victim to knife point. That rape always involves some kind of violent force, because it's just not true. In fact, many acts of sexual assault involve no overtly violent acts at all.
Isn't the percentage of sexual assaults by people they know much higher than by strangers?
Absolutely. It's much higher. Acquaintance rape is what they referred to it as. One of my first counseling positions was on a university campus. So I've actually worked extensively with this population of girls. And it was disheartening how many young girls would come in feeling assaulted after something happened, but never pressing charges and feeling tremendous shame because they didn't clearly say no, so they didn't feel like they had the right to be upset afterwards, but they had all of the psychological and emotional indicators of a trauma. And part of the reason why some of them don't overtly say no is because they're either very overwhelmed by what's going on to the point where they get sort of paralyzed mm-hmm. in the process, or they were intoxicated enough that they didn't have a real clear sense of what was going on. And as a parent, I feel it's a very important responsibility to teach your sons that they need to have a clear verbal consent from a partner that is fully capable of making that consent, such as being sober, their mental status, and their legal age. Those are all things that are required in order for someone to be able to give consent. Otherwise, they are morally and ethically liable for the outcome of that sexual encounter.
Okay, so I think we largely agree. I guess the situation where I'm curious how you feel is, let's take two 19-year-old kids, a boy and a girl, that choose to go to a party and get drunk. And let's say she even initiates some sexual overture. Is the boy supposed to, in his drunken state, stop and say, are you sure about this? Or, no, we can't do this because you're not sober and I don't want to have you involved in anything that you might regret. I mean, really, what is supposed to happen in that circumstance? I'm not trying to be argumentative. I really want to know.
No, that is the the quintessential example of where things get very muddled.
Please.
And in that sort of situation, if you know your partner well, and you've had sex sober, consensual sex, and now you're at a party and celebrating, you know each other well, there's enthusiasm in the act, there's a verbal agreement, and then there's regret the next day, that's one thing. But what tends to happen is that one person gets consent for one sort of sexual thing, like, oh, she let me touch her.
So that means I can do anything I want.
I get to, and then the girl at some point was saying yes to other things, but now it's gotten to the point where it's actual. We're talking about penetration or touching of genitals, and that doesn't mean that because she was, you know, the above-the-waist petting was okay, that the below-the-waist petting is now okay with her. She's not giving verbal consent to that. She's drunk, he's drunk, and that's actually a really, really potentially dangerous situation.
You know what's interesting?
She's waking up the next day, like you said, and finds herself in bed with a guy that she regrets having sex. When you find yourself in bed the next day with a guy, that's a lot of alcohol that was consumed. Otherwise, you don't find yourself in a bed that you didn't plan to be in, right?
Yes. No, I agree. But I do think that there's a dual responsibility in a situation like that. And I fully agree that the gray area is not clear.
Yes.
What I educated my boys on in this regard, and I want your opinion on this, is slightly separately. Number one, I made it very clear that they were not to have, as far as I was concerned, any kind of sexual, and I use the word loosely, intercourse. I mean, any kind of activity, excuse me, without absolute clear-cut consent from the woman. And, of course, we talked about the age and legal issues as well. But more importantly, from my point of view, was expressing to them that the impact of sex is so different on a boy and a girl. A boy can have sex and literally forget about it and want to go eat. You know, let's go eat. Most girls, this is a big generality, and I wrote about it in my Men Versus Women thing, the impact of sex, particularly, you know, making love, not just kissing, on a woman is a little bit more biologically profound. And I wanted my boys to understand, particularly my older one who's of age, that is that impact. For a young teenager, a boy, it's such a non-issue as far as his his emotions. They can have sex and really not be affected emotionally, in my opinion, whereas most women will be. So what do you say on that?
I think it's very possible, when we're speaking in generalities, that the emotional impact of sex can be different for the different genders. And I'm sure you can find exceptions to every rule.
Of course
there
are exceptions.
Probably a commonality. I think that boys often hear the no means no speech from their dads or their camp counselors or, you know, at college universities. But where the gray area becomes is the absence of a no is not equivalent to a yes. And I think
that's
needs
important.
To be
okay.
Very clearly identified to our sons as they reach the age of dating. You know, if my neighbor leaves his front door unlocked and I decide to walk in one day and help myself to the food in his refrigerator and he calls the police and reports a B&E, a breaking and entering, my defense is not going to be very strong if I said, well, no one ever said I couldn't come in. You know, you're responsible for ensuring that you have permission to enter someone's property. And permission to enter someone's body shouldn't be any less stringent.
So what would you advise the girls? We've talked about how important it is to advise the boys because they're potentially legally more liable. But what would you tell the young girls?
I think the girls have heard the same safety precautions since they were young.
So what is
being careful with drugs and alcohol,
right.
Not accepting a drink from another person that you didn't see directly poured because then there could be some, you know, drugs put into the drink. Traveling in groups. You know, I know a lot of girls
meaning
who wear
it's good
skirts.
To travel in groups.
That it's good to travel okay. in groups. And I know a lot of girls who wear dresses will put Spanx underneath it because it's another layer of protection because pants are harder to penetrate than a skirt. They hear all these things all the time, and I think that whether they choose to listen to those or not is, you know, their personal choice, but the girls hear the safety messages all the time, and I think that's where the danger lies, that it's up to the women that rape is out there, and they're responsible for protecting themselves against it, and I think there needs to be more of a balance between teaching our young men and our young women.
Well, I agree. Actually, I didn't even know some of the things that you just said was common among circles of young women, so that's good to know that. So the other actual risk is that they start tuning it out.
gosh, I hope not. I really don't. But it's always a possibility.
And the other question is, I keep on hearing about how certain sexual activities are starting younger and younger, and that girls are doing things that I would have unheard of in my days in high school, and that the peer pressure thing is just ridiculous. So what do we do with what appears to be this horrible peer pressure, more on girls to perform, it seems, than on boys? I mean, boys, it's a bragging right, but girls, to be popular, that they're being indoctrinated to believe that certain behavior is okay?
With young girls, I think the double message has always remained consistent. If you want to please, you have to do these things, but if you do those things, then you become a whore. And so you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. There's a reputation for either way. You're too uptight or you're too loose. And there is actually no successful balance that these young girls can achieve. They're either one category or the other.
Well, on that encouraging note, I think we will end our segment, but please let our listeners know where they can find you.
Oh, Bruce, you're going to be so excited to know that by the time Dad Chat starts tonight, I will have a new Twitter handle. So it will no longer be Dr._Weberman, but it will be AskDrJennifer.
That's a really good name. Who came up with that name?
Oh, I'd have to search all the conversations to find out where it originated, but I got lots of really great feedback.
Well, I think that's a great name, and I believe I would ask Dr. Jennifer anything I needed to do that was important in my life.
Aren't you sweet?
And Playground, your website?
TheParentingPlayground.com, and on Facebook we're on the same name.
Okay, and when are we publishing our first book?
Oh, my goodness. I've written 4 chapters, so I think I'm going to need a few more months on that one.
All right. Well, we're going to promote it for you and make it a bestseller.
Thank you,
Dr. Weberman. Stay tuned for some closing remarks after these next set of commercials.
Eliminate the negative. Latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.